So the book is launched. How excited are you?
I am excited and relieved.
Yeah, it was pretty well received. I think, was it like 600 sales in the first 24 hours? Something like that?
Yeah, something like that.
Made the Amazon bestseller list in a couple different categories, several different categories, actually.
Yeah, I think three or four Kindle categories. So that was cool.
It is neat. It's got the bestseller badge next to it, Amazon bestseller. How does it feel to be an Amazon bestselling author?
Fabulous.
Fabulous. All the hard work paid off?
Yeah, I hope so. I mean, so to be honest, it probably cost about $4,000 to put the book together between editors and designers and buying copies of the book. And I don't know, all the things that went into it. So that's my goal, is to like at least break even, which we haven't quite done yet, but it's still early. So that's one of the metrics that I'm looking at. But in terms of like how well the book was received by the community of founders that were part of, I think people said very nice things. People seem to really benefit from it, and some people seem to really resonate with it. So those are the probably the more important metrics. Is this helpful? Is this useful? Do people like it and benefit from it? And I think they do.
Yep, I think they do. That's what the response has been. We've both received emails and tweets and all types of comments about it already, which feels great. You know, the other thing to keep in mind about breaking even or making money on the book, you hear some folks launch an ebook or something and they say, I made $50,000 in the first 2 days or whatever. But it's like, it's such a different model. This book was intentionally written as something to expand, in particular, your reach and to be a calling card and to put a bunch of knowledge in one place. And so it's not priced with the traditional, you know, $50, $100, and then the $200 video package. And we talked early on about whether you should do that, but it was like, you were not maximizing for money on this one. And future things you may, you know, you may want to maximize profit and payback, but the Kindle version was $4 for the first week. And I think, what is it, $8 now? So it was just a no-brainer thing of like, I want to get this in the hands of thousands of people, right? That was your goal when we talked about it.
Yep. And I think it's well on its way to doing that.
And so thanks to you, listener, if you have shared the book with anyone, if you've put out a tweet, something on Facebook, you know, any way, even just handed your copy to the person next to you, the book is easy to buy. It's on Amazon, it's in Kindle, and it's also obviously a paperback version. And the audio version is coming. You recorded the audio version months ago and you submitted it to Audible. Is it still in the approval process?
It is. Yeah. So it's super slow, but I think any day now, but I've been saying that for a couple of days. So any day now, hopefully it should be out. So especially those of you who listen to the podcast, hopefully you can tolerate hours of my voice reading the book. So we are excited to release that as soon as Audible approves it and it gets posted live. We will let people know. If people aren't on the Zen Founder mailing list, that's the best way to find out when it's coming out.
For sure. And if you bought the book and you haven't reviewed it on Amazon yet, that would be a huge help. And you can just go to Amazon and search for the book title and even just hitting 5 stars. I don't think you need to type any words, actually. But, you know, if you enjoy the book and want to support it and want it to be discovered by more people and you feel like this message is worth spreading, that's a really good way to do that.
We plan to talk through the issues faced by startup founders and the people close to them.
Overused phrase, work-life balance.
It is an amazingly focusing time.
This is what we do, you know, aside from our families, this is our whole work life.
I am also known as Dr. Wine.
You know, this is a little bit non-traditional.
A little more zen in the startup life.
Zen founder. Those days were a mental struggle.
I have been stressed in the past, and I know that I will be in the future.
A founder and his or her significant other will both get value from the episode. So I really enjoyed your Rand interview last week.
Yeah, the last three podcasts, the last couple of episodes have been me interviewing people who've been impacted by mental illness in pretty significant ways. And yeah, my interview last week was with Rand Fishkin, and I just have such respect for him and the way that he has consistently over years talked about the importance of attention to mental health and been open about his own experience with depression. I think that's so important for founders to do, especially folks like Rand who have such a great track record of success right alongside their experience of depression.
Yeah, but I'm always struck by Rand's, just his transparency and kind of just the authentic. He's very self-aware, and that's helpful. I enjoy hearing that because it makes me think how I can get better at that. You know, like he just talks about things in a way that it's like, whoa, I couldn't say that on a podcast. And then I ask myself, well, why not? Like Rand's obviously doing okay. Like he, you know, was a CEO of this company, starting a new company now, which was totally coincidental, right? He posted last Wednesday, I think. It was like 2 days before the podcast episode went live, and said that he, you know, he was leaving Moz, the company he'd founded and worked at for, I don't know, a decade. And he's starting a new one. So yeah, I really enjoy hearing from him. And I thought the interview turned out great. And it turned out great for two reasons. One, because you're an expert and you know the questions to ask, and because he answers honestly, right? And he's not guarded, and he's not, I don't know, giving some people just dodge questions, or they don't want to talk about the real thing. And so, you know, given his authenticity and transparency, which I realize are two big buzzwords, but he really is those things. I enjoyed it.
Yeah, I think that kind of thoughtfulness and insight is really helpful because it just adds more nuance to the conversation. I think sometimes people hear the label depression or mental illness and they imagine it to be something it really isn't. Or they imagine it to be this, I don't know, sort of strange, mysterious, like that's never going to be me. That happens to other people. That's what those words, I think, kind of invoke. But when you hear somebody like Rand or Jacob or Kim, who gave the interview talking about losing her husband to suicide, you kind of hear that, like, those are very normal people. And they happen to have this, frankly, somewhat normative experience of struggling with depression or something like that.
Someone I know who started experiencing something like this said, I thought I was going crazy, you know, and I didn't feel like myself. And without hearing, like, that's a trigger now. Like if I get to the point, because I've obviously had ups and downs, I think all of us do. If I get to the point where I'm like, oh my gosh, I'm totally unmotivated, I don't feel like myself, I'm going to instantly start thinking back to these stories that I've heard on this podcast of like, man, maybe this is what I'm feeling, you know, maybe this is, it'll just help, you know?
Yeah. I think, you know, the topic of mental illness and mental health is kind of a difficult one. And for those of you who are living in America right now, there's obviously this sort of complicated conversation happening about mental health and gun ownership and shootings. And, you know, I think mental health is kind of getting co-opted into that conversation. Obviously, it's an important part of the conversation because people who are very mentally well don't often feel the need to commit mass murder. So it's not that it's irrelevant, but I think it does push the conversation to the fringes, into these acts of sort of extreme illness, rather than keep it in the context of kind of people's day-to-day lives. Sometimes I like to really dial down what we are talking about when we talk about mental illness. And I've taught Intro to Psychology for years. And this textbook had this, I think, really great way of introducing the concept of mental illness, because there's a lot of categories and words and diagnoses that get tossed around. But basically, when we talk about someone who's mentally unwell, we're talking about someone who is sort of fits these three D's: dysfunction, deviant, and in distress. So when we talk about dysfunction, we're talking about people who, because of their emotional or cognitive life, aren't able to participate in the day-to-day activities of their lives. They're not able to work well. They're not able to care for their families or participate in social relationships. They're really limited in their ability to live the kind of life that they've set up for themselves or that would be considered normal for them. So there's impaired function or dysfunction. And then the second thing that's important to think about when we're trying to understand what mental illness is deviant. And this one is the hardest, because deviant is putting someone in comparison to what would be considered normal for their society. And this, of course, gets really tricky in terms of what's normal and who's deviant and what's deviant. And that changes with history and culture and time and religion. But this is basically this idea of someone who's not participating within their culture in a meaningful way, or within their society in a meaningful way. And then the third one is distressing. People who are experiencing mental suffering are suffering. They are in distress, or they're experiences their emotional and cognitive life is causing significant distress to someone else, to a family member usually. So we can talk about depression, we can talk about schizophrenia, we can talk about trichotillomania, we can talk about lots of substance use disorders, bipolar disorder. All of them fit somewhat in this category or in these three Ds: dysfunctional, deviant to the society that people are living in, and they cause distress.
It's interesting that you've clarified deviant every time you've said it as to the society they're living in. So it's really society specific, it sounds like.
Yeah, it's based on an understanding of humans as sort of tribal animals, that we are designed to be in relationships, or like we have sort of developed evolutionarily to be part of societies and cultures. But I think I always feel a little bit uncomfortable with this perception, because of course things that used to be perceived as deviant are now no longer perceived as deviant. And societies always have this sort of group think about what they believe is normal or not normal. So that's where I get uncomfortable with labeling something as deviant. But I think a better word might be like significantly different, or kind of not able to participate in the tribe.
Right. And deviant has come to take on different meanings in as a colloquialism or a slang term. I guess it has other meanings, but you're just saying it's different.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think the distressing part is something. Remember years ago, we were talking about like a friend, and there was something like, oh, the friend has this behavior. And I honestly don't even remember what it is. It was probably like the friend drinks a lot. And I was like, well, how do you know though, if they're an alcoholic? And you're like, well, a big part of it is it impacting their lives or the lives of folks around them? And that was this is like 15 years ago. And I remember being like, oh, that's actually a really good test, you know, of any of these behaviors. Like, is your stress, is your anxiety, is your feeling of sadness, lack of motivation, is your drinking, is your whatever, does it mean that like you feel crappy all day at work, or that you're showing up late for work, or you're missing it, or are you yelling at your kids, fighting with your spouse? You know, are there ramifications that wouldn't be there if this thing was not present?
Yeah.
Is that a good way to think about it?
Yeah, I think it is. Another D you might throw in is derailing. Like, it's just something that just gets in the way of enjoying your kind of day-to-day life with the people you care about. But I guess I kind of want to come clean a little bit as a psychologist and acknowledge that there's a lot that we don't know about mental well-being and mental illness. We know that people can get broken, right? We know that people can lose touch with reality. We know that people's moods can fall so low that they no longer have a will to live. We know that people's moods can go so high that they are absolutely impulsive and erratic and unsafe to themselves usually. But we don't have great metrics to really measure and understand whether or not someone is mentally ill. So we don't have biomarkers. You know, I can't give someone a blood test and say like, oh, you have depression. I can't do that based on a blood test or some other kind of biological marker. And we are doing our best to figure out how the mind works and how the mind works in relationship to the body. But there's still a lot of mystery about that.
Yeah, and that makes it hard, right? It's like you wish there could just be, because we can test for all kinds of diseases and all kinds of, I guess, illnesses and genetic disorders and all this stuff, but not being able to just run a test or a scan or something, right? This doesn't show up on MRIs. It doesn't show up on any type of brain scans, does it?
Nope. We see some trends. We see some differences in neurological structure and function based on, you know, whether someone is significantly depressed or significantly burnt out, but we don't use those for diagnosis really, which makes it very hard to catch something early or think of it as a really concrete, cohesive medical problem, which is not to say that it isn't, but it's just to say that it's a little bit trickier and more complicated than all of us as professionals would like it to be. I really wish that there was a way to make a quick, easy diagnosis of depression or schizophrenia, and that we knew exactly the mechanisms that caused it so that we could treat it most effectively. And sadly, we're not quite there yet. Although we do have, of course, a lot of interventions that do help, whether that's just very, very careful self-care or whether that's medication. It's absolutely not hopeless, but I think I just want to like be honest about the fact that it's kind of complicated.
Yeah, no, that makes a lot of sense. And it does, I mean, you know, in talking to you about this stuff, it does seem like it's a conversation, right? To diagnosis, it's a conversation, it's a series of questions, and you're trying to just get at the symptoms. And so as long as you are able to tell in most cases if this is happening. So the diagnosis isn't just some medical scan, but it's basically a conversation with an expert like yourself.
Yeah. And really we're assessing those things that are a little more fluid, like how much pain are you in? How much is it affecting your functioning? That one can be difficult too, because a lot of, especially founders, a lot of really bright, driven people function reasonably well when they are experiencing depression. But we also don't know where they would be functioning at without the presence of depression. So the fact that you can still like slog through some blog posts and get some things done is maybe below your potential, your capacity. So the measurement is even sort of difficult. It's not its absolute number. It's something that's difficult because it's relative to your own self. But I do think that the more we cultivate self-reflection within ourselves, the more that we pay attention to our own personal ups and downs, the more that we monitor our behavior, whether that's substance use or online shopping or other kinds of compulsive behaviors that can turn into a problem, the more that we are observant and honest about how we're doing, we are the best. Our own selves and our family members are the best people to begin to flag, hey, I think there's a problem. And that's where I think mental illness is tricky, because you're your own best diagnostician. The doctor can't really see things that you don't tell them, or that your family doesn't observe or tell them.
Yeah, which makes it hard. And sometimes when you're in this state of mind, it's hard to remember. I remember telling someone, this is when we were in Boston, so it was 2008, I think. And it was a friend of mine, I told him, you know, I've just realized I'm just not a very motivated person. Like I said that, and he's like, what are you talking about? And
that's crazy talk.
And he started pointing, you've done this, you've done that, like you've been blogging, you write, you know, you're working on a book, blah, blah, blah. And I looking back, it was like, oh, that right. Like if I ever say that or feel that again, I know I'm going to know what it was, you know. I was moderately, I was mildly depressed, I'm assuming. It was winter and I don't remember what all was causing it, but I do remember just feeling like, I just can't do any of this stuff. You know, I just don't want to build products anymore, or something like that. And that was a real wake-up call, you know, for me to hear that.
Yeah, which is why it's so great to have people in your life that you could verbalize those things to. Like, I'm just not a motivated person. It's like, no, you need a sounding board. You need someone who can say like, whoa, 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 whoa. Let's look at that. Let's not let that thought live there without being challenged, which is, of course, some of the power and benefit of therapy, where you are talking with someone who's really, really good at listening for the kinds of thoughts that are potentially untrue and potentially really damaging and probably not representative of who you are.
Yeah. And that's the thing to keep in mind, I think, is obviously we've been talking about this. I mean, because not a lot of people are talking about it. There are more these days, but it still is, you know, the message has not gotten out there. You're, you know, an expert in it. And I think all founders go through this to one degree or another. Like I would personally never say, wow, I had serious clinical depression for a long time or serious clinical anxiety for a long time. I haven't, or at least I never didn't notice or whatever, but I have gone through, you know, I don't know how you describe it, but minor bouts of all of this stuff, of feeling ups and the downs and the stress and the depression and unmotivated. And I think that even having that awareness, even if you don't need to see a doctor, you don't need, you know, to take medicine or go to therapy, it's so good to have this awareness that this job that we're signing up for has the proclivity to do this to people.
Yeah. It might be part of it. Like it might be kind of universally part of it for founders. It like rather than being an exceptional experience, that those kind of high highs and low lows are the normative experience when you go out on your own and start a company and become a founder. So I do think it's important, and that, you know, it's the whole premise of the podcast, really, to sort of say over and over, like, yes, yes, absolutely. Whatever the when you're feeling unmotivated or really stressed out or anxious, like, yes, that is part of it. And it's normal, but that it's also like, you don't have to live in that. Like there's help to be had, there's friendships to be had, there's, you know, social relationships, kind of everything we talk about in the podcast is designed in one way or another to say, yes, that's true. And here's some ideas. So you don't have to be stuck there forever.
So as we wrap up, just one more reminder, if you haven't checked out the book, head over to Amazon.com, Entrepreneur's Guide to Keeping Your Shit Together. And, you know, again, we'd love a review or a share if you feel like we've offered some value to you over the past several years.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Zen Founder. Our theme song is A New Beginning by bensound.com, used under Creative Commons.